Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join in on the phone, online, or via a text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And good Thursday morning. Jim Lewis in for Brian Barnhart this morning on Penny for Your Thoughts, as Brian was hopefully going to be getting ready for an Illinois-Michigan game in the Big Ten tournament, but of course they lost to Iowa last night, so he is enjoying the rest of the week in New York otherwise. So I'll be with you today and tomorrow. This morning we've got Tom Kasich with the News Gazette with us. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Jim.
And this first hour we're going to talk with T.J. Blakeman. He is with the Champaign County Historical Society. T.J., good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
And we'll this first hour go along, and if you have any questions or anything about the history of Champaign County, we'll see what's going on with the Historical Society and anything at the cattle bank, as it were. This first hour, second hour, Tim Johnson will be joining us, and we'll just kind of talk the current state of politics, just local, statewide, and nationally with Tim Johnson coming up in the second hour. You're welcome to join us as we go along this morning. Phone numbers are 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, and that is 351-5357. You can also email us talk at WDWS.com. It is 43 degrees, and we'll get things started right after this on A Penny for Your Thoughts for this Thursday. Penny for Your Thoughts here on News Talk 1400 DWS. Jim Lewison for Brian Barnhart today. Tom Kasich with the News Gazette as well. And T.J. Blakeman with the Champaign County Historical Humane Society. Historical Society. Good morning.
T.J. is the youngest historian I know. This guy, he knows a remarkable amount of information about Champaign County and Champaign history especially. He has a phenomenal number of photographs. Mm-hmm. How many would you estimate you have?
I don't know. I don't count anymore. A couple, I don't know, 3,000 maybe. People find me now at this point, and they say, I've got a photo here or there, and what should I do with it? Or, you know, I always encourage people, the photographs need to go to the archives, but usually I'll ask if it's possible to get a scan of them just so then the museum can use them for its purposes as well.
That's great. And do you index them somehow?
I try to keep. I've got a kind of a personal collection. The museum's got a collection, and it starts to become overwhelming, like any large collection. But I try.
And what's, do you have a favorite or a?
Yeah,
a
I've got
theme?
A couple of favorites. Yeah. One of the ones it was we discovered at the museum as we were going through the reopening process. It was a small box, and in it I opened it up, and I wasn't having very good luck of finding interesting things. But I opened this box up, and there were just hundreds of negatives in it. And I start thumbing through them thinking, well, this is probably just another family vacation collection. And really start holding them up to the light and realizing, no, these are pretty special. They were photographs from all around the area. They were taken by Carol Wiley, who was a road engineer, graduated back in the 19-teens. And he went around taking pictures of the town. He would take a picture of the crown of a road, which may look like a very boring picture, but it's not about the picture of the road. It's about the context of what's around. And so I'm always looking first and foremost at the buildings. I want pictures of the buildings and the environment. And this box was full of them. And so my favorite picture, it actually comes from that collection. It's a picture he took of Church Street. And in it you see Robeson's, and you see the Rialto, and you see the Art Theater. And along the street, you see Model Ts and Model As, and they are literally lined up bumper to bumper. You could not pull your car out. They're so tightly packed, and the people are filling the sidewalk. It's just an incredible picture because it looks familiar because the things you see in it, but it looks so different compared to what we have today.
So that probably was 1920s
yeah.
or 30s?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And are you there see the lots picture of windows and Robeson's. You see all the dresses and things.
Were there people on the street? A lot of people
oh,
on
yeah,
the streets,
lots
too?
Of people on the street.
So there's, you think it might have been a Saturday night?
Could have been a Saturday during the day. There's a yeah. couple of streetcar conductors. They must have been waiting to switch off or something. They're kind of leaning up against a tree. And it's just the profile, the The image itself, the way it's set up and composed, is beautiful.
So was he a he didn't work for the State Department of Highways, or he was a local engineer?
He was an engineer, a graduate of University of Illinois. He helped on Chinook Field when they were building Chinook Field. But then I'm not clear exactly of his career path, but it looks like he at some point maybe worked for the County Highway Department or something like that, certainly in roads. You know, you come across those pictures, and all of a sudden you've got an entire box of pictures, and so those were a lot of fun to go through.
We do have a call, Chuck and Champaign, with us. If you want to join us this morning with TJ Blakeman, you can give us a call at 356-9397. Chuck, go ahead. You got a question for TJ Blakeman?
Yes, I do. I'm glad I got the guy that knows all and to answer my question. TJ, I'm with the American Legion Post 24. We have a program where we've been going into the community and saluting businesses and places like yours that display the American flag. You got a flag flying behind the building. You're on a list to receive the award, but anytime I've gone by there to try to talk to somebody to see when a good time would be to, if they do get ultimately selected, when I could be in there to drop it off, and I could never find anybody there. What are the hours that are open, and what would be a time to catch somebody there?
Well, first of all, thanks for that, and I am aware of your program. It's a great program, and so thank you for doing that. We have, and thanks for the question about the hours, because I wanted to sneak that in at some point. The museum has regular hours on Thursday through Sunday, so we're open Thursday and Friday afternoon from 1 to 5, and all day Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5. And we've got a museum manager that works for us now. We actually have been able to hire one staffer, and so he's always there, and he will be happy to help you.
It's always good to visit with a historian. I had the privilege of serving 1 year as the national historian for the American Legion, and it's quite an interesting job, the stuff that you learn and you come across.
It is fascinating. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chuck. You can call us at 356-9397. You can also text us at 217-351-5357 on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. We do have a text that came in. Says, with your Champaign County expert guest, the question is, what happened a long time ago for the Champaign County nursing home to get into so much debt, the long history part of it? Thanks, Charles. Okay. Don't know if you can answer that or not.
Well, I'm going to shy away from the politics of
sure.
that today. But I wanted to put a disclaimer out there, and Tom's very kind to call me the youngest historian. He knows, but I don't know it all. And this is one of those I don't truly know the full story. I know that the nursing home or the county poor farm was located in the brick building just north of where the current nursing home is at. And so the county has always, though, played a role in those that are less fortunate, especially back when the social safety net wasn't there. There really weren't avenues. As you aged, it sometimes became a death sentence for many people. And so there was the poor farm. There was the Garwood Home for Old Ladies up on North Market Street. And so these kinds of services started to spring up, some of them public, some of them private. But they were there to take care of those that needed it. After that, I don't really know the full story of how, you know, when the county open that home or how it transitioned to its current use. But Tom, I bet you
might. Yeah, it was the county poor, you know, all counties had poor farms and eventually morphed into nursing homes. And ours began, I think, in the 50s or 60s. We didn't always have a nursing home. We had the poor farm. And the nursing home did well until maybe the 90s. And, you know, it's just been a struggle since then. And now it's just it's overwhelmed the county financial people and the county board. So, and this is going on in other counties as well. We're not the only one. It's happening in McLean and to a lesser degree in some of the other smaller counties. But yeah,
we do have another phone call, John from Champaign. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I when I was working construction, I was hauling concrete down there around the Broadlands and all that area, and older lady, she was telling me that there was one black family down there that still formed, and she showed me there was an old black graveyard. So I started doing some research, and I come across a name, was like Hitchcock. Hitchcock, I didn't understand. And I kept doing my research, and I come to find out the Underground Railroad came through that area because a lot of the blacks didn't come to town until the railroad got here. a lot of the slaves were bringing, they were bringing the slaves up that was free, and they were down in the Broadlands, and they went from there to like, Oakland to Dr. Rutherford's house. And I kept tracing that name, Hitchcock, and it wound up leaving that area, and it went to the Vermilion County. Then it went up north, and when I trailed it all the way, there was one Hitchcock family left in Champaign. They lived on Rising Road, and I come to find out that Wild Bill Hitchcock's mother and father was helping the slaves to come through that area, and they moved out to Oak Grove, which you couldn't have two names of the same territory, and moved from Homer, Illinois, to Vermilion County. And all we know about Wild Bill's was aces and eights. I didn't realize that. He was born in Homer, on the backside of Homer.
Those are fascinating stories. We've talked at the museum before, and I've talked with others about the Underground Railroad and, you know, trying to identify any potential sites around town. What makes it so difficult is records, you know, you didn't really keep too many records of if you were helping someone, because that could get you in trouble as well. And so it's pieced together through stories that are told by family members over time. I'd certainly love to hear some more of your research.
Matter of fact, I went to the museum in Danville, the Vermilion County Museum, and they helped me start doing this study, and they found out. I know it was on the north side of Danville where they finally moved to, and somewhere in that area, Hoopston or something, and the rest, they moved up north. I think his family passed away in Illinois. Up there in Illinois, but all I remember about Wild Bill growing up was he was a gunslinger.
Well, I would love to hear more of that story. I will say that if anybody has a question that they want to send to me at the museum, my email address is president@champaigncountyhistory.org. We have our social media channels. We love to be able to, you know, once we can have someone research an issue and substantiate the story, you know, we would love to collect those stories and put them out. It's great information to put out for the community. So if anybody has any story ideas like that, that you want told, just get in touch with us.
All right, John, thank you very much for your call this morning. Do have another text. Does he, and I'm assuming TJ Blakeman, does he have any pictures of small towns, specifically Bonneville? Do you get a lot of pictures from some of the smaller communities as they popped up as Champaign-Urbana grew, the smaller communities grew as well?
They did. So I'll also confess that my personal historical knowledge has a lot to do with the city of Champaign. That comes from my day job working as a city planner for the city of Champaign for almost 16 years. So that's always been my focus. But as I've become the president of the County History Museum, I certainly have started to widen that focus. I don't have a lot of personal photographs of Bonneville, but anyone should reach out to the Champaign County Historical Archives at the Urbana Free Library. They are the county's official repository for documents, family histories, publications, photographs. They have it all. They have a wonderful staff and a wonderful space, and anyone should start there. Pick up the phone. You can call them. They're likely to help you helping you do some of the research as well. They could look through their collection. But most of my pictures are of the Champaign area and more specifically of downtown Champaign, again, just because my job over that 16-year time has been focused on the revitalization. And if I've learned one thing from history and planning as they come together is that the way cities develop, it always comes back around. And so understanding the way something was is certainly helpful to understand how it could be in the future.
Penny, for your thoughts here on News Talk 1400 EWS, Jim Lewis in for Brian Barnhart. We're with Tom Kasich, also TJ Blakeman, with the Champaign County Historical Humane Society. I'm going to write this down. It just rolls off the
History
tongue.
History
Museum.
Another text coming in on the Kessel Heating and Cooling text line. Maybe you know this. When did the Champaign County, Vermilion County line move west, enlarging Vermilion County? Was it after 1800 survey that conflicted with an earlier survey?
Ooh, that's a great question. And there is a map that is online. It's a great resource for this. I think Mark Sheldon had a role in putting some of that information together. It's a wonderful map, and it shows. So I'm not going to have the specific answer, and I apologize for that. But there's a great map online, and you can literally walk through the creation of every county in Illinois. Yeah. So if you type, you know, Illinois County map into Google, I bet you're going to find it. But it shows this area was kind of the last little piece. I think Douglas and Coles County were the last, and Ford County were the last little counties of the 102 counties to be created. And so I don't know the exact date of when Vermilion County split off to become Champaign, but it did, in fact. We were
That's one of my favorite stories, is that after Lincoln's assassination, the people of Homer saw an opportunity to create their own county. They were going to call it Lincoln County. Homer would be the county seat, and they'd take a little bit of Champaign and a little bit of Vermilion County. And it lost in both. You know, it was voted on by the people of both counties and lost in both. So there's no Lincoln County in Illinois.
That's true.
43 degrees at 9:24. TJ Blakeman, Tom Kasich, you're on Penny for Your Thoughts. We'll take a break here. You can give us a call at 356-9397. You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357.
You can listen to DWS on your Amazon Echo. Just say, Alexa, play WDWS.
Pending for Your Thoughts continuing here on Newstalk 1400 WDWS. Jim Lewis with you, along with Tom Kasich and TJ Blakeman with the Champaign County Historical Society. Got a check of news coming up in a few minutes. This on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Could you talk about the development of the area between Prospect and McKinley south of Bradley? Our house will be 100 soon and is in this area.
Say the Prospect to McKinley.
South of Bradley.
South of Bradley.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I can say is that you got to keep in mind that until World War II was over, this town ended at the old Arthur Road, or what is now Mattis Avenue. So the town just logically grew to the west, slow and steady. That area, it seems like you're right, that's about the right time frame, about 100 years for many of those old houses. The city grew differently back then. You know, today when you build a subdivision, everybody wants to kind of have one entrance to that subdivision, and they've got all the curvilinear streets. But back then, it was very orderly. Obviously, the grid pattern. People would buy large tracts of land, but they would divide them up just like the person had done before. There was no need to change up the pattern, and so that's what led to this really orderly growth. Now, what happened after that? After World War II and this massive influx of population that was coming to the university, you couldn't find a house to rent in this community. There's an article in the museum, in the News Gazette, where they're turning an old gas station into a boarding house. So that put enormous pressure on the city to grow. And so once you get past Russell Street, that's the point at which World War II happened. And everything past Russell Street, you'll notice all of a sudden the sidewalks drop off, the curb and gutters drop off, a lot of the streets go from concrete to asphalt, no street lights, no street trees, because the city was growing so quickly.
You know, west of that area is was the Bonner subdivision.
Yes, one of the planned communities, a manufacturing village, if you will, there along Glen Park Drive, which now has the new basin that's been built. But that was all worker housing for Bonner Tool and Die. And so it's our only, I think it's our only company town,
yes,
if you will.
That's what although maybe, up north, by, the name, what's that
I
name
was going
to
say
plant?
C.S. Johnson, but it isn't. Yes, they could have had up near, we're both blanking on the name.
Along the IC tracks north of 74.
Wilbur Heights.
Heights, yeah.
Yes, that probably developed a little bit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have one more call. We'll take this before we check our news. It is Tom in Muhammad. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all doing?
Great.
I got a question for Tom's mailbag.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Okay.
What is the long-range plans for the old water treatment plant on Lincoln Avenue north of University?
Oh, the part they sold. Yeah.
It has been sold.
The water company's right at Lincoln and University, right at the corner there. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The water company sold that, and they closed that, and it's for sale. And they at the time they said they thought there would be an announcement pretty soon, but nothing yet. So I suspect it's going to be I don't know, more housing. I don't know what it's zoned for, but yeah. That's a prime spot.
More high-rise apartments, right?
Yeah, unless Carl wants. No, I don't think Carl's going to be building an Urban anymore. So, yeah.
You think that's evident?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for the call, Tom. We're going to check our news with Michael Kaiser. We have some more calls and texts that we'll get to after that. Give us a call at 356-9397. Text us 217-351-5357. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts on this Thursday, Jim Lewis with you and for Brian Barnhart, joined by Tom Kasick and TJ Blakeman with the Champaign County Historical Society. You can give us a call at 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. You can also email us talk@wdws.com. We do have a text in. How did the cattle bank begin?
Great question. And actually, if you come to the museum, we have a whole panel that describes its history. It was the first bank to open in West Urbana. It opened as a branch of the Grand Prairie Bank, which was located in Urbana. And so they erected this brick building, which is the oldest commercial building in Champaign County, still standing at the corner of First and University. It was a small enterprise. Back then, banks weren't regulated, really. You could just open up a bank, and as long as you had customers that would give you money to hold, you could loan it out. And so that's the way it went, and it didn't last very long. The endeavor was pretty short-lived, but the reason the cattle bank lives on is it was there's an engraving on the Bowman map, which is one of the only really great maps we have of West Urbana. There's an engraving of the bank on that map, and it has the signage and everything. And so when the building was restored, it was restored back to that original 1856, 1857 look. And so, you know, why did it have the name cattle? Well, cattle was a big commodity in 1856, in those years. B.F. Harris was also affiliated with the bank. The owners wanted everyone to think that B.F. Harris was owner of the bank. He wasn't. And in fact, we have documents that show he tried to extricate himself when the bank failed. But you know, he derived a lot of his money from cattle. And back then, there was no corn and beans. This was marshy land that was pretty much good for grazing cattle. And so cattle was the commodity over in this part of the county.
So it was built in like 1856, right after the railroad then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
We do have a phone call. It is Cindy. Good morning, Cindy.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, there's no click. Okay, great. Okay, I got a good one for both of you. I need you to picture Duncan Road between Kirby and William. And there are two sets of trees on the, what is that, the north side. Are you picturing it?
I'm trying to. I'm actually pulling it up on my phone as you talk just so I can
look at
it.
Okay, great. There's two sets of, you know, those trees have probably been there, what, a couple hundred years?
Along the road on the west side? Is that what you're, no?
Let me see. Wait, yeah, west side, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so, because I've been over this for a couple of years with the city, the county, and the township. And I have no problem being a community member and helping and picking up trash. But you call the city, and the city technically only goes about 2 feet, their responsibility, which takes you maybe about into a little bit of the ditch. And then there's the cornfield behind it. So there's the county line. So can you accurately tell me, because nobody at the city can, who is responsible for maintaining those trees and that land?
I'm going to put my planner hat on here.
So I've been there.
Yes, the county line, that tract of land there to the west of Duncan, that farm field, is in the county.
Except there's like feet. Yeah. Go ahead.
So the county, the owner of the property is responsible for maintaining those trees. It's not a county issue. It's not a city issue. The city right of way where it ends and the private property begins, even though it is cornfields, it's still the responsibility of the property owner to maintain that hedgerow.
So you have a document, a parcel number that says that I mean, what are we talking, 12 feet from where the city 2 feet ends to the cornfield where those trees are.
Well,
that says that that is...
There should be a plat that shows where the property line actually is, and you can go on to the city's website or to the county's website and go to our online maps, and they're wonderful interactive maps. You can zoom right down. You can see where the property line is. You can turn on the aerial, and that'll give you a sense for where it's at.
And tell you who the owner is.
And tell you who the owner is.
That's not what I was told. I was told from the city that the owner is only responsible to the cornfield, and that those trees, only once in a great while when they a huge tree is, let's say, hanging down, they'll go get it.
Well, but, I probably should consult the map. I don't have the map in front of me to know where that property line's at. But if you want to.
If you guys could research that, that'd be awesome.
Well, you could contact me over at the city building in the planning and development
department. Okay, I didn't know if Tom would know too.
John Hall at the county would know too.
Yeah,
he'd be the guy to call in a zoning.
Yep.
Department.
Zoning
everybody passes the buck. Yeah.
Well, it's a gray zone where the city and the county.
It's a gray zone.
Yeah.
yes.
But I'm sure there's an answer to your question.
Yeah.
But this gives me a good segue into a historical thing, and that's that. The city of Champaign, if you go to our website, we actually have, in those interactive maps, we have a whole separate map that's a historical map. And you can turn on aerial images all the way back. The earliest one we have is 1938. Now, the quality of zooming right down to a house isn't great on all of the maps, but some of them are spectacular. And so you can actually swipe left or right to see what's there today and what used to be there.
Yeah.
And you get lost in them. I know I do.
I do too.
And it's fascinating
in the moment?
To see. What's that?
You can in the moment? Is it?
Yes, you can get lost in the moment. Hopefully you don't get lost trying to find them on the website.
I better make sure my crack's not showing, right?
Right. Go onto the website. On the homepage, there's a button that says Maps, and you'll find it right there. It's called our Historical Interactive Maps.
Okay.
They really are cool.
But think about it and let us know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cindy, thank you very much for your call. You can give us a call at 356-9397. Email us talk@wdws.com or text us Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Tom Kasich along with T.J. Blakeman with the Champaign County Historical Society. I am Jim Lewis and for Brian Barnhart.
T.J., why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the exhibits you have at the History Museum now and maybe some of those you're looking forward to in the future.
I would be happy to do that. It's almost been 1 year since we reopened the doors last April after an 18-month complete top-to-bottom renovation of the museum. Everything has changed. Our policies have changed. Our procedures have changed. Our exhibits have all changed. Everything, every surface inside was repainted, new flooring. It is a brand new building. I think a lot of people drive by the cattle bank every day and they have no idea what goes on. We encourage you to get out and come in and see us. You could do it. You could see the whole place in probably half an hour. But we have three major exhibits on the ground floor. One of them is called A Second Home, 150 Years of University Student Life, where we've recreated the dorm room from 1867, 1917, 1967, and 2017. So you actually can walk through the exhibit and see how the dorm room has changed. One of our exhibits is called Champaign County History Uncrated. That is a place where we wanted to show people the entire breadth of the collection. So we have a whole number of items out on shelves, and you can see all these different interesting items that we keep. We also talk about how to preserve that, what the process is that we go through to actually inventory and manage those documents. Because we aren't just keeping these items for 10 or 15 or 20 years. Our job as a museum is to hold them in perpetuity for the good of the community. And that becomes, when you start to think about that, that becomes pretty daunting. We have about 20,000 items in our collection. It takes money to do that. It takes community support to do that. And somebody might say, well, why should we hold on to these items? Well, it's so critical. We have my two children, my one on the way, you know, they're not going to see how some of these old mechanized things work. The ingenuity that went into creating them, the craftsmanship to build them, clothing, how someone might have dressed. And someone might say, well, why is that important today? It absolutely is important because it informs where we're going. We could look at the issues that face us today and we can say the world's never been crazier or the time has never been crazier, and it's just not true.
Their politics has never been dirtier.
That's right. Or it's just the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's just not true.
Right.
Just turn to a history book, and you'll not only see that times, in many cases, mimic what we're going through today, but you can find solutions and ways to overcome them. And that's what makes history so important, and that's why we ask for the community to get behind us.
Great.
That was a little side. Sorry about that. The third exhibit is When We Went to War. It's based off a book that the News Gazette published by that title. And that book takes little snippets of personal stories and weaves them together across the history of the war, both home front and war front. So we've taken that and brought it to life. And so you literally walk through from the development and the expansion of Chinook Field just prior to the war to the enlistment and the recruitment, all the way to wonderful stories about, we picked several people from each branch of the military and told their story along the way. And then you actually go in, you see what a kitchen would look like in the home front and how a mother would have been not only conserving and preparing meals, but also how they would have been longing for information from their loved one.
Yeah.
Maps hanging on the wall in their kitchen so when they hear a news story, they can look on the map and figure out where exactly their family member is. And so there's so much information. We actually take it all the way through the expansion after the war to the growth of the university and how that equates to the life we have today. Many of the families that are here in Champaign County are here because they're family members came just after the war to get an education, and just like myself, after college they stayed.
Yeah.
They became part of the community, and today there are townies.
But or people who were stationed at Chanute.
Yeah, absolutely. The number of people that flowed through Chanute is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
We do have a small art exhibit on Louise Woodruff. She's a fascinating story. Lived to be 102. She was an artist from the time she was born. And we have a lot of her collection, a lot of her art on the walls. We also have a temporary exhibit right now, which is Going for Gold, Champaign County's connection to the Winter Olympics. And so we have Bonnie Blair's speed skates. She won gold medals in her medal stand uniform. Catherine Reuter just donated her skates to us. We have her closing ceremony uniform. We have all kinds of fabulous artifacts from the Winter Olympics. And so if you've got some young ones, if you've got some young girls that you'd like to inspire based on Bonnie Blair and Catherine Reuter, it's a great place to come and do that.
Great.
Penny, for your thoughts here on DWS, talking with T.J. Blakeman with the Champaign County Historical Society. Next hour, we'll have former Congressman Tim Johnson joining us on Penny for Your Thoughts. 42 degrees at 9:47. Back with more.
Dance.
Penny for your thoughts here on News Talk 1400 WDWS. Jim Lewis and for Brian Barnhart, joined by Tom Kasich and TJ Blakeman. And we have Dave from Urbana right now. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, guys. It's a great day for Penny to have you two on the air together. You know, your guys' knowledge of the history of our area is really valuable. And TJ, you really hit it on the head with the importance of maintaining the history of our county and helping to inform decisions in the future. I think you're absolutely right on that. I've got to get to the museum sometime, and I know it's been documented, and I'm sure I could probably do a Google search, but since you guys are sitting there, I wanted to ask you about Lincoln's touches in the county or times that he visited Champaign-Urbana. I know he had been here maybe at the courthouse. I seem to remember something about a debate that he had in one of the parks. I don't know if that's true or if I'm just mixing things up. And then also, is it true that his favorite meal was a haystack from Marianne's Diner? I heard that too.
That's great. I can start. There's a couple of stories that stand out to me. Yes, he obviously on the circuit, he spent a lot of time in Urbana around the courthouse, but we do know that he would have walked past the cattle bank. I like to tell people when they come in that it's the only building in town that he would still recognize. Now, we are still looking for the check he cashed there. We haven't found that yet. But we know that because he spoke across the street at the Goose Pond Church, which is where the Champaign Police Department's at. We have one photograph of that church. And actually, if you go out to the Museum of the Grand Prairie, they've reconstructed the interior of that church as part of their Lincoln exhibit. But he did visit the town numerous times. And there was one instance I know of where he spoke at the county fairgrounds. I believe it was either the day or maybe 2 days after Stephen Douglas spoke.
Right.
They didn't debate, but they were in town speaking kind of back to back. And And from what I think, he took the train here that time and departed the train here in West Urbana and went down to the fairgrounds and made that speech. So he would have been in and around down West Urbana at the time, just a little bit. But by the time he left, you know, Champaign wasn't a community until 1860 officially as Champaign. So he wouldn't have recognized necessarily that name because he would have been on his way to Washington. Tom?
He ran a race.
Yes, the foot race.
Yeah, the foot race, I think on Elm Street, right?
Yeah, somewhere around the court. I thought it was Maine or Elm or one of those around the courthouse. Yeah. He ran a foot race.
Yeah, and he that was the Pennsylvania House was there. He would stay there on occasion. Then he would stay out by the Salt Fork in St. Joe with somebody's cabin. I can't remember the guy's name, but there's a historical marker there. He spent a lot of time in Champaign County.
Well, and his last speech given in the state of Illinois was in our county. It was in Tolono on his trip out. He spoke from the back of the train, and so that would be the last moment he spoke. I don't know if he informally spoke in Danville as he went through, but the last official speech he ever gave in the state of Illinois was in Tolono, and there is a marker down where I'm marking that.
Yeah.
Wow, thanks, guys. That's
thanks
great.
For the call.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
So I wanted to ask TJ what was some of his favorite stories of Champaign County history. He's got a great one that I don't think I'd ever heard before.
So Tom asked me this question yesterday. Tell me what your favorite story is. And this one, I don't know if it's my favorite. It's up there. And it's been told to me numerous times by people in the community who have been here for a very long time. And so I tend to believe it. But I'm encouraging people not to get their shovels out of the garage just yet. So the rumor is that when the circus was visiting here, they set up in West End Park, which is today Eisner Park, and that during that stay, one of the elephants fell ill and died, and that elephant is, in fact, buried under what is today Eisner Park. And so I don't know if that's true. Again, don't get out your Dopplers and your shovels and go out there and start digging. The Park District would not like me if I encourage that. But I have lots of photographs in the collection showing a lot of elephants. There was the circus, the pictures I have in particular from 1912. Everything was offloaded from the train there at University and the Illinois Central Tracks. And then they paraded through downtown. They went the wrong way today up Neal Street. So University Avenue up Neal Street. And they went, instead of going down Church Street, they went down Hill Street. And they went all the way out where they set up the tents. But it is an absolute, I mean, there's probably 15 elephants in this picture. They've got camels, they've got horseback riders, they've got these huge organs that were on the back of wagons. It's really fascinating to see, and I think they took Hill Street as their route instead of Church Street because I suspect that they didn't want the elephants stepping on the streetcar tracks.
Yep.
And so that's one of the many stories.
West End Park is just a fantastic idea that people would not believe existed here.
So West End Park, for those of you that live around Eisner Park, it's a great story. I wish we had more photographs. All we really have is a drawing of it. But it was a product of B.F. Harris Jr., who for a short time bought the electric railway company from William McKinley. And he was fresh out of an Ivy League school and bought the company. And his family all lived, the Harrises all lived on Church Street and Hill Street and that area. And so he built the spur that went out there, but didn't just build the spur to go out to Mattis Avenue, decided we should have an attraction, something that draws people. And so they built West End Park. It was an amusement park. There was, it shows up as a casino and there were ball fields. And but the biggest thing there was the switchback.
Yeah.
It was a wooden roller coaster, early primitive roller coaster that basically just had a couple hills and it went down from Hill Street to University, or from Church Street to University, it went down, and then it turned and came back. And that was it. It was called the switchback, and it blew over in a windstorm, and that was that. But today, you would never think of this. At the time, it was on the fringe of town, and it was this amusement park where people could get out of town a little bit and go enjoy themselves. But it was all entrepreneurial because it was all to drive streetcar traffic.
Yep.
We'll be back to wrap things up for this first hour of Penny for Your Thoughts here on DWS. Coming up on 10 o'clock here at Newstalk 1400, WDWS Champaign-Urbana. TJ Blakeman been our guest this first hour. TJ, thanks for coming in. Anybody wants to get in contact with you, see the exhibits, just find out more information about the cattle bank, how do we do that?
Well, I encourage everybody to stop and see us in person. I think you'll really come away with learning something. I think you'll be really amazed at how the that we've transformed the space. We're open again from Thursday and Friday from 1 to 5 and Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5. We do have a community room. If you want to have a small event, we can host about 20 people. So if you want to do something special like that with one of your groups, let us know. You can also get a lot more information at ChampaignCountyHistory.org.
CBS News next, then DWS News. Tim Johnson joins us in the next hour here on News Talk 1400.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And Jim Lewis and for Brian Barnhart today and tomorrow for Penny for Your Thoughts. Thanks for joining us this morning. Had a good conversation last hour with T.J. Blakeman with the Champaign County History Museum this hour. Along with Tom Kasich, we're going to talk with former Congressman Tim Johnson. Tomorrow's show, Mary Schenck will be in studio with us, and it is unofficial on the U of I campus tomorrow. So we'll be talking in the first hour with U of I police spokesperson Patrick Wade, also Champaign attorney Mark Lipton. Second hour of the show tomorrow. It is also the official 150th anniversary of the first day of classes at the U of I. So a member with the U of I archives is going to join us tomorrow in the second hour. This hour, Tim Johnson, if you'd like to join in the conversation, you're welcome to give us a call at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Email talk at wdws.com. 42 degrees at 10:09, and back to get things started with Tim Johnson and Tom Kasich next here on DWS. Penny for Your Thoughts here on News Talk 1400 DWS. Jim Lewis in for Brian Barnhart today and tomorrow. Tom Kasich with the News Gazette in as well, along with Tim Johnson.
Thanks for coming in, Tim. It's good to see you, and I appreciate your time. I'm sure the listeners will as well. Just wondering how you're doing. You know, you're on the Parkland board now, but we don't get to see you as often as we used to when you were in the legislature or in Congress. So how's your health?
Good. We're doing very well. I had a little bit of a setback here a few months ago, but I'm doing fine.
Good.
More than fine, and I appreciate it. Appreciate being here. This is the first time in the new studio. I haven't, I spent all these many years out on South Neal Street, and this is a nice studio, and I look forward all week to being here.
Did you used to do Penny for Your Thoughts when Larry Stewart did it? Really?
Yeah, I did.
When do you think your first time was?
Oh, gosh, Tom, I would get it was in the 70s sometime when I was on the city council in Urbana. Larry had me on several times, and I, in fact, quite a few times, and I enjoyed it. And obviously I enjoyed it with Jim, and looking forward to the new tenure as well. It's pretty hard to fill the shoes of Larry Stewart and Jim Turpin, but Brian and the crew will do a good job, I know.
So you've been in local politics almost 50 years.
Well, exactly 50 years, because I was elected, Tom, in 1968 as a write-in for precinct committeeman out in southeast Urbana. So it has been almost exactly 50 years.
Huh.
So it's been a long time. Seen a lot of things come and go in that period of time, and a lot of history. I mean, a lot of history that kind of parallels the political involvement, too.
And then you were on the city council starting in 71, right? Urbana City Council.
City council for 4 years, and I was in the legislature a long time from 70, basically elected in 76 through 2000 when Tom Burns took my job. And then I was in Congress till 2013. And then with a couple year gap, I'm in Parkland now, now and enjoying that. So it's been a long time, and it's been fulfilling to me. It really has.
And never lost a race.
Never lost an election. Nope. That's something I'm proud of. Most of those times, the elections were fairly perfunctory, but there was a few that weren't either. And I guess unless you count running for delegate as losing a race, of course, there you don't lose yourself; your candidate loses. I ran this time as a delegate committed to Marco Rubio, and of course, all the Trump. I think actually there may have been a Ted Cruz delegate elected in this area, but that's that's not really an election on your own. So
right.
Yeah, still undefeated.
Right. So wondering, you know, what what do you think of what's going on in Congress now, and especially, I was going to get at, are any of the people you served with, any of your colleagues still there, or has it really turned around that much in 6 years?
It's been a big turnaround. I mean, I'm sure there are certainly some that are there, but there's been a huge turnover in both parties. And so I would guess that if I were to go back, I wouldn't recognize half of them anymore unless I happen to see them on the news.
How about your good friends, though, the people you would hang around with?
Adam Smith is still there, and Dan Lipinski is still there. But many of my good friends have left, too. So it's a fluid process, not necessarily from the election process, Tom, as you know, but just through retirements and attrition and otherwise. There's been a big change that length of time.
And people don't seem to stick around as long as they used to.
No, they don't. You know, back when Congress, back in the forming days in the late 1700s, it was regarded service in Congress as an obligation to good citizenship. You served there a term or two and then you went on. Then for a long, long period of time, including perhaps today, it's regarded as a career, you know, and the various benefits that accrue from it. But I think you're right. I think you're starting to see a lot more turnover now for a variety of reasons, including a lot of the impasse and a lot of the anguish. Jeff Flake expressed some of that, of serving in such a polarized world.
It seems to me there are a lot fewer moderates there, moderates like you were, that were, you know, occasionally cross over and vote with Democrats or try to bring Democrats over to the Republican side. Do you think we're ever going to get back to that kind of, part where people work together?
I hope so, but I'm not very optimistic. I was one of the founders of the Center Isle Caucus, and all the founders of that are gone. Nobody's still there. I know Rodney Davis is involved with a No Labels group, I think, if I'm not
mistaken.
Well,
he was. Now he isn't.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Well, he was at one point.
Yeah.
But there is kind of a successor group, but I'm not sure that it's nearly as active as we were. And so at this point, the divisions are pretty locked in, and I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. But I do know that when I was there, I was always generally right in the middle. From 1 to 435, I was generally right in the middle in terms of my voting record.
And yeah.
I didn't do that deliberately. It just turned out that way.
Yeah. So. And we've talked about this, not on the air, but we talked about fundraising. And you were...
the worst.
Well, you say you were the worst, but that was deliberate, right? I mean, you didn't want to...
I didn't want to raise money. I wasn't good at it. I didn't like it. I didn't like calling people asking for money. And it was an unpleasant process. And unfortunately, in today's world, Tom, it's become the name of the game. And in fact, virtually every account of races, including local ones, I mean, you've run columns as well. The race is more who's got more money and who's able to raise more money than it is anything else. And I just wasn't good at it, and I didn't like it, and I didn't do it. I didn't do it very well, and I didn't do it very much at all. So I spent less money than in my whole political career than probably will be spent in a typical high-level congressional race in just 1 year. And that's just part of the process, you know.
Well, I was looking up in your race for re-election in 2004. You were only raced a little bit more than $500,000, you know, half a million, and Rodney Davis has $1 million in his account right now, and a good number of the candidates running on the Democratic side to challenge him have raised, almost that much money. So it's just
it's
stunning.
It is a different entity. It really is. Rodney's very good at it. I mean, he's an excellent fundraiser, and I give him credit for that. But boy, I wasn't. It's just not something I was good at, and not something I particularly like to do. But you're right. This race, like so many races around the country, the fundraising process is never ending. I haven't seen what the Democratic figures are, but I'm sure they're raising money.
Yeah. And that's another thing where I just don't think it's gonna reverse. It's just gonna get bigger and
I think so too.
Keep growing.
I think.
We're talking with Tom Kasich and Tim Johnson here on Penny for Your Thoughts. If you would have any questions for the guys, you can give us a call at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Email talk at WDWS.com. A couple texts come in. We'll get to those and calls after this here on DWS. Ready for your thoughts on News Talk 1400 WDWS, Jim Lewis in for Brian Barnhart, along with Tom Kasich and Tim Johnson. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 217-356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email talk at WDWS.com. We do have a call, and it is Anna Wall. Good morning, Anna Wall.
Good morning. I hope Mr. Johnson remembers me.
Well, of course I do, Annawal. How would I not remember you? You've been a good friend for a long, long time, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, I'm grateful for you, even though you and I didn't agree all the time, but we certainly were good friends.
We were, and we continue to be good friends.
Absolutely, and I just called to say good morning.
Well, good morning to you, and I appreciate your friendship over a long, long time. You're a good citizen, and we need more people like you in the community.
Well, thank you, dear. Bye.
We do have, thank you for the call, Anna Wall. We do have a text. What do you think, ask Mr. Johnson, what do you think about term limits for politicians like the U.S. president? This way it gives all citizens fair chances to learn, grow, participate into politics and democracy, and not have these same people in over and over the years.
Well, I think there's a merit in it if it applied uniformly. As I know from personal experience and otherwise, an individual, and there's many, many, many who decide they want to do it, and then they realize that their effectiveness is tremendously limited because of a self-imposed limitation. But I think term limits make some sense. I don't know what the current statuses of legislation at a federal state level regarding term limits, but they do make sense. I know that's one of Trump's and Rauner both have emphasized that as something that they believe in. I think there's a lot to be said for it, but I also think that, as many people say, elections are the best form of term limit, and it's easier said than done.
Got another call, and it is Paul. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Hello, Tim.
Hi.
Nice to hear you on the air.
Oh, hey, Paul. I'm not teaching a class this semester, so you and Tom won't be able to be my guest, but hopefully next fall.
Thank you. I'm curious if the two-year term is a reasonable length of time. It seems like one of the reasons you have to raise so much money is you have to run twice in 4 years.
That's true. I mean, of course, that was the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. They regarded the Senate, who of course wasn't even elected by a popular vote at the time, as a sort of a House of Lords sort of thing, and the other the House of Commons, the analogy to Britain. And so I'm not too concerned about that, frankly. I think that it keeps you accountable, and even though it's a agony to go through every 2 years in terms of fundraising and otherwise, you'd have to amend the Constitution to do that, and I don't think that's likely to happen.
Well, I think you're probably right. It just seemed like an unnecessary expense these days. My only other question was, should there be a cap on the amount of money that can be donated to a candidate or to all candidates? I look at the amount of money that, for example, the NRA donates, and it's just incredulous.
Well, there is a limit. But obviously with Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision, the limits are not there's nuances, but there are limits. I mean, there are limits to not how much you can spend, but there are limits to how much you can raise.
From individuals, but there's ways around it.
Yeah there
like
are.
You said.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
You can get independent expenditures.
Do you miss being there?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you do something you enjoy, you miss it. Tom Ewing told me that one time. But at the end of the day, I'm glad I made the decision that I did, and even though I miss it, I'm glad to be here with other priorities.
Well, the community has benefited from your father and from you and the service you guys have performed, and I just want to thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We benefited from your voice all those years too.
All right, Paul, thank you for the call this morning. Let's go to Jay in Savoy. Good morning, Jay.
My name is Jerry.
Jerry, I'm sorry. That's okay.
Hi, Tim. I remember when your little girls used to come out and pick green beans out of our green bean patch. I just wanted to say hi.
Hi.
With such animosity there is between the Democrats and the Republicans today, I don't foresee anything getting done, no matter who is governor. And I hear these commercials from J.B. Pritzker about how great he is, and then there's the next commercial that says he was with Blagojevich, and who do we believe?
It's a difficult thing to tread. I think commercials tend to obviously be made to benefit the person who's making them. And I certainly agree with you. There's tremendous animosity and division that doesn't serve anybody well. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you just go on, and the people who are participating in those sort of divisive campaigns, voters should reject. But, yeah, I remember you, Jay, and I appreciate you remembering me.
You think this is the time for a third party, so maybe there wouldn't be so much animosity towards a third party that would kind of be in the middle between the two?
Oh, I certainly think that's a possibility, but it's pretty unlikely. I think that the environment for a third party in the United States is, because of our laws, I think it's very unlikely. You're going to get some occasionally, like Ross Perot when he ran, that had some traction. But overall, the system is just so biased. David Gill found out that the last time.
Yes.
I just think it's difficult to even get on the ballot, let alone run an effective campaign. Occasionally you get somebody that beats the odds, but this is not like Western Europe, and I don't think that's realistic. I mean, I think it's a desirable objective in some ways, but I don't think it's realistic.
All right, Jerry, thank you for the call. We're going to take a check of news coming up here on DWS with Michael Kaiser, Tom Kasich, and Tim Johnson with us up until 11 o'clock this morning here on Penny for Your Thoughts. We've got Rush after that, Sean Hannity at 2, and then the News Hour, 4 o'clock, Sports Talk at 5 o'clock this evening here on DWS. Let's go ahead and check our news right now with Michael Kaiser, and back with more of your calls and texts here on Penny. Penny for Your Thoughts continues here on News Talk 1400, DWS, Jim Lewis and Brian Barnhart. You can give us a call at 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 217-351-5357. You can email talk at wdws.com. In the studio, Tom Kasich and Tim Johnson. And let's go back to the phones for Eric in Mahomets. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think probably one of the most palatable deals with tournaments would be maybe your committee structure in both the state government, legislative government, and the national legislative, but that might be able to be broken down a little bit, because it seems like, you know, you always hear references to the junior senator from Illinois or whatever. Well, the guy that, you know, they should be on equal footing, you know, something. The tournaments might help that, because but it seems like every time they announce, you know, a new elected or install the new legislative bodies, it seems like everybody should start from scratch, reform committees and proceed along lines like that. I think it would be very much more productive and more responsive government that way.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, there's a certain amount of sense in that. I don't know. I don't know that I have the answer any more than you do, but that's certainly that's a theory.
You'd certainly be arguing the same points over and over,
yeah,
though, with new characters.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure that's realistic either, but it's a thought.
All right, Eric, thank you for your call this morning. Let's go to Jack in Champaign. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. When Tim retired, I remember it was kind of out of the blue, and if you could share why you retired then and why I never really knew or read about it, and I was just, if you could shed any light on that. And then with Dick Durbin, is his power structure, he'll just be there like a lot of senators in today's world till he feels like retiring? He drives me crazy, but I mean, I know this is Illinois, so I better get used to it. So I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I think the same thing's true across the country. I mean, there's certainly a lot of strength in the incumbency, the ability to raise money and earn media and so forth. So I'm not sure he's going to be there. I think he's probably reached a point in his career where I'm not sure he's going to.
I
can't speak for Dick Durbin, yeah. But I think that I don't think he'll be there forever.
He's had health problems, and I would think this is his last term.
I would think so too. I just had some individual concerns and issues that arose fairly quickly during that period of time back in 2012, and I just thought the decision was one that was appropriate, and I'm pleased that I made it.
All right, Jack, thank you for your call this morning. Do you have a text in? How can we influence more citizens to vote?
Well, of course, the United States has one of the lowest participation rates of any democracy in the world. I think part of it probably arises from the frustration people feel about the divisions within our process and the polarization. Other than just good citizenship flowing from within, I'm not sure there is any answer. We certainly shouldn't have mandatory voting like some countries do, where they fine you if you don't vote. But some people suggested that. I'm certainly not in favor of that. But we are, even on a good year, we're well below most countries in the world in terms of voter participation.
It's sure a lot easier to vote now than it was.
It is.
30 years ago.
It
right?
is. So I don't think, I mean, certainly there's always going to be complaints about access to the ballot and that sort of thing. But overall, our process allows people to vote. If you want to vote, you can vote. And I would like to see us do better in that regard, but it is what it is, and so you just go forward.
Phone numbers are 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Lawrence in Champaign, good morning.
Good morning, all.
Morning.
Tim will probably recognize my voice, but I shall remain just by Lawrence. I'm calling to ask if he received this booklet about the governor you don't know.
No, I didn't receive it.
Well, I have no idea how I would be on the mailing list and you would not be on the mailing list, but it's purportedly composed by at least one or more Republicans, one named Chris Cleveland.
Hmm. Well, I haven't seen it, so it'd be a little hard to comment.
I got it yesterday. Yeah.
Maybe I'll get it today.
It's got to be expensive.
Chris Cleveland ring any bells for you?
Not really. Not really. I don't recognize that name.
He's the head of the Chicago Republican Party.
Okay. Was it a negative piece on Rauner?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I probably will. My guess is if you vote in the Republican primary, you probably get one.
So you cannot give me or anyone listening any advice or authentication about anything that's in there. That's too bad. I hope they have you back on so that we can do that at another time.
Yeah.
In a way, it's quite alarming about what interconnectivities may be going on between people like Emmanuel and some of the older dailies and Rauner and somebody else right now whose name I can't remember. Maybe someone sitting there.
Well, yeah, some of that stuff is true. I mean, Rauner and Rahm are friends. They used to go on vacations together. And the stuff in there about Diana Rauner is true, that she's a Democrat and has given the Democratic candidates before.
Right, exactly.
But a lot of that is really spun to make the governor. And this is from, it comes from the Jeannie Ives campaign. So it's, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
You got to take it as part of the campaign process. Yeah. I'll probably get it, but I haven't seen it yet. So it'd be a little hard to comment on something I haven't seen.
All right, Lawrence.
Okay, well, I could like to flip to a second point if I can.
Sure, go ahead.
I called a week or two, maybe three ago, just to throw in my two cents about the county nursing home. And my memory is that the county nursing home was very highly thought of and was easily awarded by the voters money to expand and modernize to what it is now. And I'm still kind of stunned. It seems to me like out of the blue, you know, the nursing home is having problems. This is a few years back, this news hit. And I was wondering if you, Tim, knew anything about what is going on or what went on and why is there a problem with the nursing home just going on the way it used to.
All right, Lawrence, thank you. We'll let him answer that. Go ahead, Tim.
I'm just a citizen with respect to local government. The county nursing home's not exactly my bailiwick, so I don't really have a particular opinion on that. I probably have some of the same concerns that you do, but I don't know enough about the inner workings of it to really have an opinion.
Let's go to Brian in Gifford. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well today. Go ahead.
Good. I'd like to ask Congressman, what are we going to be able to do to protect our gun rights? Because not only in the federal level, but apparently the Illinois House just passed some bills, including one. I haven't read all the legislation on it, but they're wanting to confiscate weapons from young adults. That would be the 18 to 21-year-old range, I'm assuming, which is totally unconstitutional. What can we do? I mean, it seems like everybody we vote to put in is just backstabbing us right and left when it comes to our rights.
Well, I'm certainly a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, as I assume you know, and its counterpart in the Illinois Constitution. The best thing I can tell you is that you need to communicate with people who represent you in the Congress and in the state legislature to make sure that they're advocating for your positions. I think if you live in Gifford, you certainly have legislators and a congressman who are pretty strong on the Second Amendment. But that doesn't mean that the same thing's going to be true with respect to somebody in Indianapolis or in Houston, Texas. So it's an ongoing process, that's for sure. I certainly share your concerns.
Oh, good. And I hope the local news departments and the News Gazette and everybody really starts putting out the information that it wasn't the fact the kid got a gun so much the fact that the Broward County Sheriff's Department, the FBI, and the school district totally dropped the ball and purposely would not arrest people, would not document, would not record. This kid did everything, did multiple assaults, and he should have been arrested, and that should have flagged him. He should have been flagged, and he should never have been able to get the gun, but nobody obeyed the law.
Well, you're right. I mean, that's no matter how many laws you pass, if people have the will to violate the law and commit horrendous crimes, they're going to figure out a way to get a gun or some other.
Oh, I know.
So the answer is that I believe you're right. There are some areas I think we can address that make some sense. But I think overall your concerns are well placed.
All right, Brian, thank you for your call this morning. You can give us a call at 217-356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 217-351-5357. Tom Kasich, Tim Johnson in the studio today, Jim Lewis in for Brian Barnhart, and right now Daryl in Paxton. Good morning, Daryl.
Yes, maybe this has been addressed before in the show, but I haven't had the radio on very long. What is the logic behind not allowing or raising the age of gun ownership, especially rifles, to 21?
That's a proposal, I think, in Florida. I can't tell you what the logic is.
Well, I mean, Illinois, they said it on the news that it was being bills in Springfield.
Yeah, I can't tell you. You know, I'm not part of that process, so it's kind of like any other situation when you have a difficult, an awful situation like occurred down in Florida. I think the individual was less than 21, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm, 19.
And so hard cases make bad law, as the old expression goes. So
right.
People tend to respond to crises in a specific way.
Okay. Well, I just wondered. I've heard before that, why the drinking age is 21 is because people under the age of 21 maybe lack mature judgment. And if all this is the case, and if we're going to raise gun ownership to 21, joining the military should be 21. Cigarettes and alcohol obviously should be 21, and they shouldn't be allowed to vote till they're 21. Because if they lack the judgment to own a gun till they're 21, they must obviously lack the same judgment to be able to pick leaders for our country.
Well, that's an argument that's been made for a long time.
Daryl, thank you for your call this morning. Ted, Richard, you guys are on hold. We will get to you with Tim Johnson. We do need to step away for a couple minutes. We'll be right back here on Penny on DWS.
You can listen to DWS on your Amazon Echo. Just say, Alexa, play WDWS.
Penny, for your thoughts here on News Talk 1400 DWS, Jim Lewis and for Brian Barnhart today and tomorrow. Tom Kasich with the News Gazette with us, along with Tim Johnson. You can join us at 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Let's talk to Ted in Tuscola. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning. I just turned you on. I've always wanted to say it to Tim, but again, I'm not much into politics. I do know somewhat that the past 8 years of Obama was just terrible, and the Liberal Party has been hijacked. Tim's old school liberal, which is good man. I'm sure if I researched him, I could find something negative, but irrelevant. I just want to say I work with his son, Brett.
Oh, really?
You knew Brett. Yeah. Oh, he's the real deal. He could be making three times what he makes due to your political connections, and that's rightfully so. Nothing wrong with that, but he's the hardest working son of a gun you'll ever meet. Honest, nice. He gives liberals a good name, and I'm not a liberal, but he's a good man.
Well, thank you.
I can't say that enough, and I'd be proud. You should be proud, I'm sure you are, to have him as a son. And I've always wanted to say that to you.
Well, it's very nice of you. I'm very, very, very proud of Brett and his family and all the kids, really. He's a construction laborer, and he's a good one, that's for sure. And I'm very proud of Brett.
The
he's
best.
A wonderful person.
The best. And you take care. It's nice talking to you.
Nice talk to you. Thanks for your nice comments. I'll pass that along to Brett.
All right, Ted, thank you very much. Let's talk to Richard in Tuscola. Good morning, Richard.
Morning, gentlemen. Tim, thank you for your service. And I know it's sometimes a very thankless job to get involved in Illinois politics, but I believe you were trying to do the right thing for all the years you were in office. I wanted to, pardon the term, enlighten you to the matter that was raised by not the last caller, Ted, but the previous one, wondering why people who were not 21 years of age could have a firearm. And I have the answer, and it's in the Old Testament. When Israel had come out of Egypt, there were periods of grumbling. And at one point, God threw up his hands and says, that's it. Nobody is going to enter into this promised land that I have promised. Those that are 20 years of age and upward are going to fall in this wilderness. Now, when I read that many, many, many years ago, I thought, well, there are probably a lot of 17, 18-year-old punks who sided with their father and said, yeah, Dad, we had a better back in Egypt, you know, out here in this wilderness. And I concluded that God did not hold those kind of men, even though we call them men, accountable. Until about, 5 years or so ago, I was reading and found out that biology had discovered that a man or a woman's brain is not fully developed until they reach the age of 20. And I go, wow, God knew that and said, well, even though your brain is not fully developed, it looks like it at times when you're 17 and we're going to charge you as a criminal and we're going to prosecute you as an adult. Well, they've ignored the teachings of the Old Testament in that regard. We should be more gentle with young men. Not the shooter in Florida. He should have been helped, and he wasn't. But anyway, Tim,
thanks
for
your...
They're not fully accountable in God's eyes, from what I can see, until they reach the age of 20. Just a thought, guys.
Just a thought.
Hey,
yeah.
Have a good day.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, Richard.
Tim, what do you think of President Trump?
Well, it's a mixed bag. I mean, everybody would agree with that. I think that His delivery sometimes is a little less than smooth, but I think his policies are ones that, for the most part, I support. I think sometimes he gets unfairly criticized for more his style than his policies. And I think that the polls now and the popular perception is starting to change. You're starting to see that high unfavorability go down and his favorability go up. So, again, it's a mixed bag, but overall, I support what he's doing. At least I support his policies. I think he needs to lose the Twitter account, and I think that would improve his delivery. But nonetheless, I think his policies are pretty solid.
I always wondered what you would have done on that tax cut, because you were kind of a deficit hawk.
I was,
and I, you know, this is going to add to the deficit, and what
be a difficult issue for me.
Yeah.
I do think, you know, that with the Laffer curve and the various aspects of the benefits of tax cuts, that would have been a difficult issue to deal with. I probably would have voted for it, but again, I didn't see all the details, and so I'd have to reserve judgment until I make a little more responsible approach to it. But it's a tough issue.
Yeah.
Take one more break before we finish off for this hour and a couple more minutes with Tim Johnson here on Penny on this Thursday.
Hi, it's Tim Dittman. Tonight on Sports Talk, a post-mortem on the Illini hoop season. Your input is welcome. Plus a conversation with Monticello basketball coach Kevin Roy. Tonight at 5 on DWS.
Coming up on 11 o'clock here at Newstalk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. Jim Lewis in for Brian Barnhart today and tomorrow. In the first hour, TJ Blakeman with the Champaign County History Museum joined us. We've had Tim Johnson on for this hour along with Tom Kasich. Tomorrow, Mary Schenck in studio, unofficial on the U of I campus. We'll talk with folks from the U of I Police Department and a local attorney about how unofficial goes. And it's also the official 150th anniversary of the U of I tomorrow.
Offline here, we were talking about Tim's endorsements. You're backing a couple people in the primary. That's Chris Miller down in the 110th House District,
right.
and John Rector for Champaign County Clerk. Anybody else?
I'm certainly for Erica Harold. She hasn't asked me for a specific endorsement, but I'm certainly for her. I'm for the governor. I want Governor Rauner to be reelected. I think there's a couple things he's done that I'm not especially enamored with, but overall I think he's done a good job, and I certainly support him. It's going to be an interesting election year. It really is. I mean, I can't sit here and make a prediction about how a lot of these races are going to come out. It just seems like everything's up for grabs.
There was a poll out by the Paul Simon Institute came out yesterday that showed that Rauner today would lose to either Daniel Biss or J.B. Pritzker.
Badly?
He's double digits. He's down
right?
double digits to both.
Is that right?
But a lot can change, right? And
oh,
he's got gobs of money, and, of course, so does Pritzker. But that's going to be a bloodbath, isn't it?
Oh, be a real bloodbath, no question about that. It'd probably be more money spent on that than any gubernatorial race in the history of the country.
All right, Tim, thank you very much for coming in today. Tom, thank you as well. We've got CBS News next, then Rush, Hannity at 2. I'll be back at 4 o'clock for the News Hour here on DWS.